AnEndlessWar.com is hosted by Green Geeks. Get unlimited disk space, bandwidth, email addresses, domain names, and databases, all on entirely green-powered servers for as little as $4.95 a month. Click the link in my sidebar to find out more about Green Geeks and their world-class service and support, and to help support this show. It's Friday, 10 June 2011, and this is An Endless War. Folks, Godless Kenzer here once again, your sexy loaf of podcasting badassery. As you can probably already tell, I'm in a much better place in my head now, and I'm ready to do this thing the right way. So, how does that grab you, geniuses? Philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and lurking conservatives. Need machines, huh? Remember that one from the old KTLK show? That take me back. So, I went to the VA clinic in North Bend the other day. I got appointments set up to get the ball rolling, and so I should be getting better about that pretty soon. I've been living alone for a while now, and I have almost zero social interaction outside of the internet. I just have a hard time finding a reason to talk to people anymore. I always enjoy myself when someone else initiates the conversation, but when I look at people I don't already know, I just don't feel like I have anything in common with them to talk about. I don't know. I'm sure it'll get better eventually, but just need to get those appointments started and talk to somebody. I've been thinking about adopting a dog, actually. I've always loved dogs, and taking them out for walks or latrine time would be a great way for me to get more active again and lose some of this weight, too, actually. There's a good-sized field across the road from my place where people are always bringing their dogs to play. The pet deposit for my building is $500, though, so it might be a while. But that's enough about me, though. There's some congratulations in order and some thanks before we get to the meat of the episode here. First, I would like to give kudos to Ohio Republicans who have succeeded in electing state senators who are hard at work making sure that more Ohioans don't have to be paid as much as they had been. They're at war with their own constitution in the process, too, so this one's a twofer. See, Ohio has a minimum wage clause in their constitution that sets theirs higher than federal minimum for a lot of people. But there are still enough sensible people living in Ohio, though. So the GOP there knows they can't weaken that with a constitutional amendment. So instead, they're trying to make that clause apply to less workers. So yeah, as per their SOP, Republicans are showing their usual love for constitutions, as in, I love you, baby. I promise I won't do it again. You just keep saying things that make me so mad sometimes. So congratulations, Ohio Republicans. Your bosses thank you for voting to give them an even bigger share of the wealth you create. And, special thanks go out to Linda and Kaylee with an AI and a GH for their extremely generous donations through my Podomatic page. I forget I have a PayPal button there most of the time. I love Podomatic, and they've always been great for me, but to be honest, I have been more focused on AnEndlessWar.com lately. In fact, you can usually find me there, and that's really the only place to comment on the episodes that I've left open because I don't need to split my attention up any more than I already do just on the research I do for the show and the other crap that I look at because, well, quite frankly, my mind's always wandering from one thing to the next, and I don't surf the internet. I kind of drift it from link to link, and there's always something interesting in front of me that I have to check out. All right, moving right along, though, I'd like to go back to what Ohio Senate Republicans are doing again for a moment to start this next part, because what they're trying to do is the usual assault on workers that cons are so enamored of. See, they do this kind of thing, and they'll use the same rationalizations to justify it as they do with shifting more of the cost of society onto those of us who are getting less of the benefit from it. And I think we all know what they'll say, right? How about we all say it together, then? It's going to create jobs. Let's look at that claim, though. it's ludicrous on its face when you take even a few seconds to consider it. You know, cons are supposedly so fiscally wise and business savvy, and yet they either don't understand how business works or they're deliberately lying to us. All right, let's say I own a bakery where I sell my awesome Burex, peach and cream cheese sweet bread, and any number of other goodies that I might devise. You know, like cream cheese and chocolate chip pastry roll things that I do. What are we going to call it? Dave's Killer Bread's already taken, so let's call it Dave's Homicidal Pastry. Nah, let's just... Godless Kinzer, let's call it Dave's Godless Delights. All right, so Dave's Godless Delights is doing really well, and people from all up and down the Oregon coast are driving here on weekends to get their lips on my buns, and locals are swarming me the rest of the week, too. But I found the perfect size for my staff. Demand is steady, and we're handling it just fine. Now let's imagine I'm making enough for Republicans to finally give a shit about me, and I get one of those tax breaks. Now, in real life, me not being a capitalist, I'd probably put a big chunk of that into improving, like, health insurance for my employees or giving them raises or something. But for the sake of Republican dogma, though, we have to think like them and put the people who are making me rich last. So now that I'm back to thinking like cons, the evil me would stroke his Van Dyke and pocket the extra because he doesn't need to hire any more workers. All right. Now, for the record, I wear a goatee. Now, the style of facial hair that proves someone is evil includes a mustache and is therefore a Van Dyke, not a goatee. There is a difference. And anyway, I trimmed my goatee a little bit too narrow right now, and I look like I look like I'm ready for a Civil War reenactment. But all right. Getting back to the subject at hand here, any boss who knows shit from Shinola will not pay any more in expenses than he or she already needs to, especially if it means hiring more workers. Because a worker doesn't just cost them, you know, it doesn't just cost what you pay them, right? An employee is also a risk. There's a risk of accidents, illness, incompetence, any number of other things. And you aren't just paying their salary, you're also paying into things like, you know, if you do offer health insurance, you're paying for that. You're paying work, you know, paying for workman's comp insurance, you're paying into unemployment insurance, you're paying, you know, all of your parts of the safety net that we have in place, well, that we still have in place, as tattered as it is from continuous conservative attack. But anyway, you know, in light of all these, hiring more people when demand doesn't make it necessary is the last thing a smart boss does. But the cons' favorite tax structure, where the bulk goes to the bosses and the rest of us get their scraps, does not create demand for goods and services that make hiring necessary. In fact, it reduces demand. You know, when more people spend money, that equals more jobs. If one fat cat is given another $1 million and 10,000 of the people who made that fat cat rich each keep $100 more than they would have, how much of either of those 2 millions is likely to immediately go back into the economy? All right. Now, if that millionaire came into my shop and bought as many Burex as a person can eat, you know, it would still not make enough demand for me to hire another worker. Now, if those other 10,000 came to buy as much as they could eat, though, see, then I would need to hire more people. Now, tax breaks only create jobs when they go to the people who are going to spend that money back into the economy, not to fat cats who'll just hide most of it away, you know, taking more blood out of our economy's veins. When sensible tax policies are used that do create jobs, the bigger problem, though, is where those jobs are. Now, more often than not, when a boss opens a factory these days, it's not in the U.S., Let's pay the bills now, though, and then I'll talk about what happens when the bosses create or, more often, just shuffle jobs around inside the U.S.
During my second tour in Iraq, I was working 67 hours a week at our hangar and spending most of my free time researching and recording my old podcast. I didn't have a lot of time for recreational reading. I did, however, have my MP3 player loaded with audiobooks that I'd ripped from CDs. I could enjoy the books that I love, like Stranger in a Strange Land by Robert Heinlein, and still have both hands free to beat on the helicopters. If you find yourself with less time for the books that you love, Audible.com has a solution. They have over 85,000 titles available that you can download directly without the waste and pollution of producing and transporting CDs. You can listen to them on any of hundreds of devices while you work, commute, or just work around the house. You can try them free for 2 weeks by going to audibletrial.com/AEWpodcast or by clicking the link in my sidebar. You'll get a free audiobook while you help support this show. That's audibletrial.com/AEWpodcast. Let's talk about jobs inside the U.S. So we're going to talk about another worker choking class warfare scam that cons will try to foist off on us as job creation. I'm talking about business incentives. You know, when one city or state asks the bosses to stop fucking the people of another one and come and fuck the people of theirs for cheaper. You know, it's like saying, whoa, hold on. Don't pay them $20 to suck your dick. We'll do it for $5. When a city or a state tells a company that it'll foot the bill for their use of our resources, what it really means is that the people will pay for that share instead. If the previous state was a worker-protecting state rather than a boss-protecting state, then the bosses get a real bonus. Not only do they get to pay the workers a smaller share of the wealth they're creating, but those same workers then pay the bosses' share of keeping the community worth living in. Now, does the company's site need water and power services connected to it? No problem, just to hand the bill to the workers. Now, do roads need to be widened or added to accommodate the company's shipping? You know, well, the workers are more than happy to pay for that, too. Never mind that it's going to leave less money for teaching the workers' kids or less funding for any of the other ways that we, as Americans, have decided we're going to take care of each other. The bosses must have their drones toiling to make them richer. They make us fight among ourselves to see who can degrade themselves the most to get that honor. Now, they convince their toadies in our legislatures and city halls and county commissions to make us fight each other. Now, we cut each other's throats in a race to the bottom, and what's the prize we win? Once we get to the bottom, we get to be paid less than the guy who supposedly lost and pay the boss's bills from the pennies they toss at us. Don't misunderstand me. Competition is good. In fact, competition really does bring out the best in us. It drives us to excel. Now, conflict, however, does not. Conflict and competition might look the same superficially, but they're very, very different in their results. Now, competition is seeking to be better at something, or better than someone, but conflict is an attempt to destroy. When you outperform a competitor, that can inspire them to work harder and to improve, and that'll make you try harder and improve yourself. It's like sparring. But when you destroy them, you remove your own incentive for improving. Now, the bosses, though, they don't seem to get that. Because they're out to destroy. They're out to destroy because anyone competing with them might end up with what they want. And we know what they want. It's simple. They want more. The bosses must have more than they can ever spend in a lifetime. No matter how much they have, it's never enough. And competition is fine, they'll say, but not for them, and especially not for their children. In fact, our kids shouldn't even be in school, according to the cons. They should be working, because work is for the kids who weren't smart enough to be born on third base. Ask Missouri Republicans about that one. They know. They were lucky enough to get their way and elected state senators who are working hard to make sure that our children get to work hard, too. Of course, the spawn of the bosses won't have to work. Cons believe that being born lucky is a sign of being better than the rest of us, you see. Now, we all understand wanting to leave something for our kids. Something to take care of them when we're gone. But, taking care of our families is just the right thing to do. But when we take such good care of them that they never have to compete or work or improve themselves because they were challenged, are we really doing right by them? How are they going to learn the discipline they'll need if something happens? You know, suppose there's another big crash, but this time the bosses drag us down with them, and your child has to work their way back up. How prepared would they be if you had just handed everything to them? If you really want to do right by your kids, you leave them enough to get started, but not so much that you allow them to be weak. In the next episode, I want to talk about the estate tax and how it's good for innovation and making our society creatively more competitive. Every episode, I'm going to suggest a way that we can take action, either as a community or as individuals, to start cleaning up the mess we found ourselves. Now, rather than just flapping my gums bitching, I figure I should at least offer some ideas for solving some of our problems. Now, since we're liberals and we're more teamwork-oriented, a lot of them, like this one, are going to be team efforts. There are a lot of great resources online for finding people in your local area who share our concerns and values. Meetup.com, livingliberally.org, those are just two of them I can think of off the top of my head. You can use sites like that to create a regular local meetup group, a meeting group, and you can find existing ones or, you know, go start picking each other's brains on where we go from there. Now, you know best what your local community needs to be working on. And yeah, that's one more way to start putting our house back in order. Contact me through the link at the top of the page at anendlesswar.com if you have ideas that you'd like to share too, and I'll go ahead and include them here. Eventually I'm going to set up a voicemail and toll-free number like I had with Watch It Burn. But in the meantime, if you feel like recording an MP3 or a WAV file or something and sending it to me with your comments and thoughts or whatever, I can share my audience with you. If you have, an announcement about a group that you're putting together in your local area, hey, well, let's make this a collaborative effort and, I don't know, make this into some kind of information clearinghouse for fellow liberals. Eventually, if it gets big enough, soon enough, I'm going to install a social networking plugin on anendlesswar.com where we can meet up and organize there, too. And let's make this thing huge. Thanks again for listening, folks, and special thanks to Kaylee for your donation and to Linda for sponsoring this episode. As always, I owe all of you my gratitude for making this worth every bit of the effort I can put into it. If you like what you hear and you'd like to help keep the ball rolling, you can support the show in any number of ways by checking out the links in my right sidebar at anendlesswar.com. You can buy stuff from my advertisers there, make a donation directly, leave warm comments in the blog entries for each episode about how I've touched your life, pushed back the darkness, and shown you that life really is worth living again. Or you can just call me a smug, hateful, arrogant, commune, Nazi-alist, or some equally ignorant teabagger scare word. So, in closing, I'd like to mention that I am still, though I be the lone survivor, a proud member of the Progressive Podcast Network, whether it's still in any kind of functional state or not. Of the nearly 50 shows in the network, though, roughly 24 are still being produced. So if you go to progressivepodcastnetwork.org and click the link that says podcasts, start digging around, you'll probably find something that you like. And when you find another one you like, especially if it's Wake Up America, which I still listen to, it's just an awesome show. Documentally.com is just brilliant. Christian has moved on to many, many, many other projects that he has going kind of concurrently. The man's just, wow. He's just the energy of a Jack Russell Terrier. It's just crazy. But when you find another one you like, especially if it's one of those two, unfortunately, the documentary links there don't work. But if you go to documentary.com, you can find him. Anyway, when you find one that you like, fire them an email asking about the network and tell them that Godless Kinzer sent you. We need the Progressive Podcast Network now as much as we ever did. And I think that we can get it up and running again. I honestly do. And once it's going, we can make a difference. We need to build an echo chamber for our ideas like the cons have with their corporate media. The biggest problem we had with Air America was that it was being run as a business, but the investors that they had were thinking more like capitalists than the ideologues that bankrolled the beginnings of conservative media did. You know, Fox sacrificed, you know, Murdoch sacrificed tens of millions of dollars into Fox News for years before it finally turned a profit. And Air America just didn't have people that were willing, people that were ideologically committed enough to take in a loss for a while to, you know, until it could finally swim on its own. But that's why I think that the future of progressive media is in us, the independent producers who are doing it because we believe in it, because we know and understand that politics is not a game. It's people's lives. It's about the future of our species, especially in a country with the kind of influence and power that the United States has. You know, we have a duty to the rest of the world to make sure that we have a duty to the rest of the world to make sure that people like Sarah Palin do not, you know, Governor Salad Shooter there, and, you know, Word Salad, look it up, you'll know what I'm talking about. But you know, people like Salad Shooter and Michelle Bachmann should never, ever have control of our nuclear arsenal. And that's why it's incumbent upon us to get our progressive message out and point out that progressive ideals are American ideals. This country was built by people working together, not by the rugged individualist just his cabin up on the mountain. Those guys never built a barn. Those guys never helped bring in their neighbor's crops, any of that. And that's not what America's about. America's not about selfishness. America's not about me, me, me. America is about we, the people. So in closing, I'm going to leave you with an old promo for the network so you can get a taste of what it was about and what it could be again. Until next time, folks, take care of each other and watch your six.
The anti-Bush press makes terror.
Their interests are not your interests. Their truth is not your truth. The corporations have their media. Now we have ours. The Progressive Podcast Network. Now we are the media. Listen to your media. Take your country back. Go to progressivepodcastnetwork.org. The Progressive Podcast Network. ProgressivePodcastNetwork.org.
Just 'cause I got a hotel in my foot don't make me a boogaloo, moogaloo, moogaloo!